This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is located in the heart of Africa. It's the size of Western Europe, and its mineral wealth is estimated to be worth $24 trillion. Perhaps this is why U.S. allies, Rwanda and Uganda, invaded then Zaire in 1996 and again in 1998. The invasion triggered an enormous loss of lives, systemic sexual violence, and widespread looting of the country's natural wealth. And the interference in the DRC continues unabated. Human Rights Watch reported earlier this year that Rwandan army officials provided weapons and recruits to support a mutiny in its eastern regions. Maurice Carney is executive director of Friends of the Congo, which is a U.S.-based, Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group working with Congolese human rights organizations. Good morning, Maurice, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning. It's a pleasure being with you, and thank you for having us with you today.
Maurice, tell us about the latest developments right now in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
I'm sure. In regards to the latest developments, for your listening audience, the Democratic Republic of Congo is located dead smack in the middle of Africa. It's actually the heart of Africa. The country is the size of Western Europe. It is bordered by nine other African countries, has a population of around 70 million people. So it's the fulcrum on which the African continent swings. So it is a key country for the continent as a whole. And the latest developments in the country really is an extension of what has transpired since 1996, in that Congo's neighbor, Rwanda, has either invaded the Congo or sponsored rebel groups inside the Congo. And since April, in the east of the country, which borders Rwanda, rebel groups have risen up, sponsored by Rwanda, and have displaced a 500,000 people. And this is well documented by the United Nations, where they show how leadership in Rwanda, the military at the highest level of the Rwandan government, have been sponsoring rebel groups inside the Congo. And we can go into details as to why that has taken place. But for your listening audience to know, 500,000 people have been displaced, rendered homeless, instability in the east, which is a part of the conflict that has been ongoing since Rwanda first invaded the Congo in 1996. Backed, of course, by the United States and the United Kingdom in particular.
Half a million people displaced is an incredibly large amount of people affected in that way. What impact does this have on the country as a whole or the region as a whole?
In terms of the impact on the country, it has, for all intents and purposes, brought the country to a standstill. Whereby the resources from the government itself, civil society, religious institutions are all focused on bringing the instability to an end. So it is a top priority for everyone, and what that does is it reduces the ability of the society to move forward in addressing dire needs of poverty, a lack of education, health care, and really a restoration from this 16 years of simmering conflict in the country. So it has had a tremendous impact on the Congolese population across the board.
Now, we said in the introduction that Human Rights Watch reported earlier this year that Rwandan army officials provided weapons and recruits to support a mutiny in eastern Congo. What does Rwanda gain by destabilizing this region?
Well, Rwanda has much to gain, not so much by destabilizing the region. there is a, let's call it a parallel network, an illicit network in the east of the country that's made up of rebel figures. And Rwanda has control over this network. And the network does several things for Rwanda. One, it assures that Rwanda gets access to the rich mineral resources that are there in the east of the country. We're talking about diamonds. We're talking about gold. We're talking about coltan, which is a mineral that's key to almost every electronic device that that we see in the modern world. We're talking about tin. These resources are worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the Rwandan national budget. So they want to maintain access to those resources. So that's one reason. A second reason, which is less viable, but understandable nonetheless, is that the genocide that took place in Rwanda, many of the forces went into the Congo, and there are remnants of those forces in the Congo, and Rwanda uses that as a rationale for intervening in the Congo. So there are security reasons why they're involved as well. And thirdly, political reasons. Rwanda wants to assure that they have influence and some may even say control over eastern part of Congo. So for these three reasons, politics, security, financial, Rwanda tries to maintain a strong influence in the east of the Congo, and unfortunately they do this through military means and the establishment of military infrastructure in the east of the country.
Are the mining companies benefiting from what's happening there? Rwandan companies, or where are they from?
Sure. I mean, mining companies are really from all over the world, because Congo has minerals that are key to global industries, whether we're talking about the jewelry industry, whether we're talking about the military, technology, aerospace, electronics industry, you name it. Congo has minerals that are key to these the functioning of these industries. So you have a number of Canadian companies, like right in the area where the conflict is taking place. There's a Canadian company, Banroll, the Banroll Gold Company, and they have ownership of mines in that area, outright ownership. Now, what's the benefit to these mining companies? Well, when you have a weak government, and it's ineffectual government as they do in the Congo, you can go in and establish sweetheart deals where you get mining concessions for pennies on the dollar. And this is what Banroll has done. First Quantum used to be there in the Congo as well. I believe they're right there in British Columbia. They're no longer there. You have Anglo Gold Ashanti, South African company. You have Malaysia Smelting Corporation from Malaysia, and they get their minerals primarily from Rwanda, who's extracting the minerals from the Congo. So there are a wide range of companies that are involved exploiting Congo's riches to their benefit and to the expense of the Congolese people.
Now, Rwanda is an ally of the United States. So what is the role of the United States in all this?
Well, Rwanda and we must add Uganda, those are the two strongest allies of the United States in the region, who have invaded and destabilized the Congo. And they could not do what they're doing in the Congo without the support of the United States and, I must add, the United Kingdom. For example, Rwanda has received $1 billion from the United States since the late 1990s. So they're able to do in the Congo what they're doing because of the backing of United States, United Kingdom. That's why we here in the United States continuously putting pressure on the U.S. government to change its policies in the Central African region, a policy that was really grounded in the Clinton administration in the 1990s, where the Clinton administration developed what they called the new leaders of Africa, new breed of African leaders, or Renaissance leaders, and they dubbed Paul Kagame of Rwanda as one of those leaders, Yoweri Museveni of Uganda as another one of those leaders, and interestingly enough, a few things that these leaders have in common. One, they're all authoritarian figures, they're strong men. Two, they've invaded another African country with the backing of the United States. And three, they have the blood of millions of Africans on their hands. And these are the leaders that the U.S. And other Western governments present to the world as being good for Africa. And the Congolese are saying, no, they're not good for Africa. They're not good for the Congolese. In fact, they have to be in the International Criminal Court for the crimes against humanity and war crimes that they've committed.
When Obama was a senator, he sponsored a bill that called for more accountability in the region. Now that he's president, what's happened with that bill?
Well, very little has happened with the bill. In 2006, he sponsored a bill that was signed into law by George Bush called the Democratic Republic of Congo Relief, Security, and Democracy Promotion Act. We call it Public Law 109-456. And we've been pushing for him to implement this law. And as you rightly stated, a section of the law calls for accountability in the region. It says that if any of Congo's neighbors invades or destabilizes the Congo, the Secretary of State in the United States has the authority to withhold aid from these countries. Now, the Secretary of State is Hillary Clinton, and she co-sponsored the law when she was a senator. But since they've been in office, very little has been done. It's only recently, as a result of pressure from us, other advocacy groups, some major foreign policy publications, started raising the issue and the contradictions. They're saying, here it is, Mr. President, one of the few laws you passed as senator calls for accountability in a region where millions have died, and since April, a 500,000 have been displaced, but you've said nothing, you've done nothing about it. So as a result of that pressure, the Obama administration finally conceded and withhold a symbolic amount of aid from Rwanda because of its recent role in destabilizing the east of the country. And a host of European nations followed suit and withheld aid as well. We're talking about the UK, Sweden, Netherlands, Germany, all withholding aid. So there is progress being made, but it's incremental, and it could be much better, especially considering the scale and the gravity of the problem that we see in the country right now. And accountability at the international level can make a difference in the local situation. So we're calling on the Obama administration, we're calling on the Canadian government, we're calling on the European nations to continue pressuring the Rwandan regime so that it stops supporting rebel groups inside the Congo that are destabilizing the region and displacing millions of Congolese.
Well, definitely congratulations on that victory, and thank you so much for joining us here this morning.
Well, thank you, and I want to encourage the people in British Columbia that have been very supportive to join us for Congo Week. It's a week where we commemorate the millions of lives that have been lost, raise awareness about the situation in the Congo. Folks in Victoria, Kasmussen University, I hope I pronounced it correctly, they've all supported us in the past. So we encourage them to do that again and visit us at congoweek.org. And from October 14th to the 20th, we'll be commemorating those lives that have been lost in the Congo and raising the profile of the Congo. And by virtue of people doing this, it's making a difference. So we truly hope that that they will join us. And hopefully you'll be able to reach back for us back in October and rally your local community to get involved in this global movement.
Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thank you now.
I've been speaking with Maurice Kearney. He is Executive Director of Friends of the Congo, a Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group working with Congolese human rights organizations. As he mentioned, Congo Week will take place in October. You can find out more at congoweek.org. And you're listening to Red Eye at Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.